Lock Island and Rock Point had given considerable thought to their formation. Of their 25 galleons, only the 12 Rock Point had taken to Larrick had shells in their magazines. For that matter, 10 of Lock Island's 13 galleons couldn't have fired the new ammunition if they'd had it. They mounted the old-style long krakens with which the Royal Carisian Navy's galleons had originally been armed, but the shells had been designed for the new model krakens, which fired a 30-pound shot instead of the older gun's 35-pound shot. The formation they'd adopted alternated Rock Point's shell-armed ships with Lock Island's own galleons. The only exception to that was the lead pair, Armagh and Darko Sound, both from Lock Island's original squadron. So far, there'd been no need for the shells, given the crushing surprise they'd achieved in the initial engagement, and Lock Island had no intention of allowing the other side to know the new weapon existed until he had an opportunity to use it decisively. So they were going to fight their way into Harper's sprawling formation with old-fashioned round shot, and only then would Rock Point ships switch to shells. While they lost, at any rate, the High Admiral thought grimly. Now he watched as his flagship drew closer and closer to the church squadrons and felt himself tightening internally once more. "Whatever happens, these bastards are about to get hurt worse than they ever imagined," he told himself. The leading church galleons began to fire. The range was still long, especially for inexperienced gun crews firing in such poor visibility. The thunder and lightning of their broadsides shredded the night, yet almost all of their 25-pound and 12-pound shot plunged harmlessly into the sea, and the Carisians held their fire. They sailed through the splashes, flinched at the thudding sledgehammer sounds as the occasional shot actually struck one of their ships. Most of the leading Carisians were purpose-built units, however, with the heavy framing and thick scantlings of true warships. The weak church gunpowder and lighter shot were no match for their stoutness. Here and there, round shot wailed through the air above a ship, or punched through a topsail like invisible fists. Shrouds were sliced away, and seamen swarmed up ratlines to splice severed lines. A few shots, a very few, luckier than their fellows, found targets of flesh and blood. A 25-pound shot erupted through Armagh's quarterdeck hammock nettings. One of the carronade gunners dropped without a sound as his head vanished, and two more men on the same gun went down, writhing as their blood patterned the planking. A casualty party hurried them below to the waiting surgeons and healers, and one or two of the flagship's men looked at one another uneasily. Most, however, simply stood there, watching the flashes of the enemy's guns, waiting. The High Admiral could hear at least some of them commenting scornfully on the church gunner's lack of accuracy, and he found himself grinning as one gray-haired gun captain turned his back on those gunners, pulled down his trousers, and waved his bare buttocks at the enemy. A roar of laughter went up, mixed with catcalls and some incredibly obscene suggestions for how to improve the insult, and the gun captain redoubled his efforts. It was unacceptable, of course, and his division officer's snarled reprimand recalled him quickly to his own responsibilities, but Lock Island doubted the youthful lieutenant's heart had really been in it.
"I think they're just wasting powder and shot, Arnold," Harper said quietly, watching his lead ship's fire, and his flag captain shrugged.
"I don't doubt it, my lord. On the other hand, there's no way to stop them from here. It's possible they'll get lucky for that matter, actually kill a Carisian or two, maybe even bring down a spar. And frankly, I'd rather have them firing, even if they're not hitting anything, than eating themselves up with worry. Besides," his teeth gleamed faintly, reflecting the distant broadsides, "in another 20 minutes they'll be close enough they will be hitting something."
The two fleets' slow, steady approach was totally different from the initial clash. There would be no ambush this time, no sudden surprise of artillery thundering out of the night. This time, both sides knew what was coming, and the church gunners began to score more hits as the range was slowly but steadily pared away. A crashing sound and a chorus of screams from forward told Lock Island that at least one church round shot had finally gotten through. It might have found an open gun port, he thought, or it was possible the range had fallen enough for even church gunpowder to start punching through his ship's sides. He glanced at Silman Baker. Moonlight poured through rents in the cloud cover now, turning sails to polished pewter, and our mock's captain stood motionless, narrow eyes measuring ranges, evaluating firing arcs, looking for gaps between enemy ships. The fingers of his right hand drummed slowly, rhythmically, on the scabbard of his sheathed sword. Another round shot ripped through the midship's hammock nettings. It killed a marine, chewed a 2-inch semicircle out of the back of the mainmast, then careened off into the darkness somewhere on the far side of the ship. Baker didn't even flinch. He just stood waiting, and Lock Island felt a sudden surge of warmth, of affection, for his dapper little flag captain. Still the range fell. Armok's bowsprit thrust out ahead of her, aimed like some knight's lance, but at a solid mountain range of moon-washed canvas and waiting broadsides, not at another knight. Gun ports began to flash ahead of her, scores of them, hundreds. Round shot howled through the air, punched into her bows, ripped through her sails. More of her crew went down, wounded or dead, and other men stepped into their places. Grips tightened on handspikes, on the staffs of rammers. Knuckles whitened. Here and there, lips moved in silent prayer, and still the range fell. Even to Lock Island, it seemed incredible that so many guns could throw so many shot at a single target without ripping Armok to pieces. The thudding sounds grew more frequent, louder. Splinters flew. More men screamed. The fore top gallant mast pitched over the side. One of the foredeck carronades took a direct hit, and its carriage disintegrated, throwing a deadly sheet of splinters across the deck. And then, finally, his flagship, still without firing a single shot, began pushing her way physically through the gap between two of the church galleons.